So I get to talk with audiences, line of business, security folks, IT folks, audit people every once in a while, a little different than the rest of us, about cybersecurity and how to run the program. And at the beginning of an audience where I have a mixed group of people like this, I'd like to talk about, you know, how do we think about security and how are we going to approach it? And there's several different ways we can approach it. The first one is the optimistic way, you know, the glass is half full. The pessimist, the glass is half empty. Those two we pretty much know. There's also the IT way, which is, well, the glass is half empty because something broke, you know, the server crashed. And then there's the security way, which is that Chinese hackers penetrated our network, spent 6 months doing lateral movement across the network to compromise privileged credentials, access the pump station, pump all the excess water to North Korea, lower the pressure in the system, and deprive us of all the water we need. Needless to say, as security people, we don't get asked to cocktail parties very often. Now, there's one other category here that a couple of years ago, I would have said that our business people, if we asked them the same question, would say, well, water is an ingredient for beer. But over the past couple of years, unless you've been living surrounded by water out on an island, you're well aware of the massive amount of attacks, the onslaught of attacks against our organizations that are coming from a variety of actors. And these bad guys fall into three categories. Hacktivists, people who do it because they're mad at you. People who do it for money, and people who do it for politics. The thing that they have all in common, all of these bad guys, is that they're extremely well organized. I've even got on the dark web, and if I want to do a phishing campaign, I can actually hire a call center with native speakers in English, French, Texan, and they'll give me a gold, silver, or bronze level service package. There's whole marketplaces. There's the equivalent of Amazon out on the dark web where you can go buy credit card numbers, medical information. It's a whole industry out there. It's not just your lone wolf hacker anymore. They're obviously well funded if it's cybercrime involved, $600 billion a year in cybercrime impact. And mostly they're patient. In some of the recent breaches, everybody was amazed that they'd been in the environment for 30, 60, 90 days before they were discovered. That didn't really shock us because the average time that bad guys are in a network before they're discovered is 250 days. So 30 or 60 or 90 is actually pretty good. They're extremely patient when they're attacking our organizations. We're truly in an era of industrialized threats. Basically, just sum it up. And those threats fall into three categories. Confidentiality attacks, this is where they steal something. Credit card numbers, medical records, credit card reports. Anybody in here caught the Equifax breach? Anybody in America? Same population. I was to go get a security freeze. It's the only thing that works. Credit reporting is there goes your credit. Or credit monitoring. This is also, in this industry in particular, this is stealing the Game of Thrones scripts and releasing them. Or stealing the next Star Wars blockbuster from the production house and releasing it. That's all confidentiality attacks. This is the bulk of what we see so far. Availability attacks are the next one that we see a lot of. This is ransomware. It's something, you go out, it runs on your computer, it locks your computer, and extorts you for money. Best defense against it is a good backup. Because if you pay the ransom, yeah, they're honorable thieves. They'll give you your data back, but then you just encourage them. The other one that's emerging is what we call a denial of service attack. This is where the internet of threats or the IoT devices that are out there get compromised and we flood somebody with a whole bunch of traffic. We see this a lot for e-commerce sites where it's extorted. We see it for political sites where they do it because they're mad at them. I'm waiting for the first year we stream the Super Bowl and somebody decides to do a denial of service attack on the Super Bowl stream. Those kind of threats are very real and they exist today. The ones that's emerging are integrity threats. This one is a little bit tougher. It's if you were going to go out and change a stock price in the stock market so you can buy it cheaper. Or more apt, again, for this industry, if I was going to hack Netflix and go change the expiration date on my account to give me free Netflix, that's an integrity attack. Those are very difficult to execute, and they're very difficult to detect. And we're just starting to see some of those now. Now, when I talk about some of these things, I get accused of wearing a tinfoil hat. My brother does that all the time. And sowing fear, uncertainty, and doubt, or FUD. The truth is, though, is that if we're going to protect our brand, which is really what security is all about, we have to take a step back and really, truly assess, be realistic about where we're at in this environment today, and look at the risk that we face. Now, risk is an interesting topic. It's something that we handle in business all the time. If you're in Florida, you know how to handle the risk of a hurricane. In Oklahoma, you know how to handle the risk of a tornado. In Denver, you know how to handle the risk of the Broncos. All of those are risks, and we know how to handle them. Cyber is just another business risk. It's a significant risk for sure. David Petraeus and Warren Buffett, two guys that couldn't be more opposite, both agree that cyber risk is the greatest threat, emerging threat to our corporate organizations today. There's just no other threat that even comes close to it. So we do have to take it seriously, but that doesn't mean we have to look at it differently than other business risks. And one of the key tenets of that is that we can't secure everything. There just isn't enough money, time, resources in the world to do that, so we have to prioritize things. Because we legitimately have some constraints. As much as we all want to believe that we have more capability and the ability to really prevent these attacks, we can't do that. So one of the places we start is with audit compliance. Now, Equifax was compliant. Target was compliant. Home Depot was compliant. Anthem was compliant, but none of them were secure. So audit and compliance is a starting point at best. Now, if we assess risk around this, though, sometimes we have to do things because we get huge fines. Other times, we may choose to not be compliant because the fine is cheaper than being compliant. And that's that risk assessment process that we have to go through. GDPR changes that equation quite a bit. Another constraint that we have is staffing. This is one where, when I talk to a security audience, I get a lot of head nods. Because our LinkedIn was lit up about 4 years ago in terms of recruiters contacting us. And particularly if you have certain key titles, they come out of the woodwork. I've never been in such demand. It's actually kind of cool. Right now there's 150,000 unfilled cybersecurity jobs in the US. There's projected to be 1.5 million by 2020. I think those numbers are actually low. When I had dinner with 12 CISOs here on the West Coast several months ago, over the course of the meal, I wanted to pick their brains because I was the dumb guy in the room. I asked them what the greatest threat to the organization was. And given who was in the room, and these are big brand name companies, you all, I'm sure, used them. I would have expected cybercrime or nation state hacking. The consensus was finding and retaining qualified technical people. It was the greatest risk to their organizations. Because even when they do find them, because of the demand, they walk out the door after 12 or 14 months for $30,000 more money down the street. And when that happens, they lose all of the knowledge of the security infrastructure and the corporate infrastructure, which is actually our next challenge. Our security infrastructure is from the dark ages, you know, 2005, back before mobile and IoT and cloud, when we were really focused on an era of perimeter security, building moats and castles, or what I call the stale peak phenomenon, you know, those wonderful little Easter candies, the marshmallow on the inside. When they get stale, they get a hard, crunchy exterior and a soft, gooey interior. And that's what most of our organizations are today. And so when you have an environment like that, and then you actually want to do something with those systems, like interact with your customers, sell something online, distribute information, work with business partners, you end up putting doors in your walls. And the challenge is that doors end up breaking. And the truth is, we don't have a perimeter anymore in our organizations. And like the old joke in the industry is, there's two kinds of companies, those that have been breached and those that know they've been breached. And the bad guys are already inside. This is very true. I was working with a CISO at one of the electrical utilities in the country, and he's convinced he has dark malware from nation states sitting in the electrical grid in his utility, waiting to be activated if there's a geopolitical uprising. That is something that is just his reality that he lives in. That's not fear, that's what he has to manage. And you can't just reboot the grid to clear the malware. He's got a different kind of threat model than the rest of us do. So when this happens, anybody ever see the movie Chicken Run? See the movie Chicken Run? Great movie. There's a scene in there where they blow a kazoo and all the chickens run around screaming. It's a great scene. Kind of like IT every day. When there's a cyber event, we all do that, and we go out, we play whack-a-mole, and we get a point solution to fix the point problem that we're having. And that's great. You know, we go out, and then somebody steals some credentials, so we go get an identity solution, and we get ransomware, so we go get a backup solution. And we lose a big picture when we do that. And this is what's happened with most of our organizations, is that we've evolved a security architecture over the years instead of building one from scratch. And so let me give you an example of what I mean by this from the film industry. I'm from Colorado, and so let's pretend we're going to go make a Western. I know it's not a popular genre today, but I still got my boots and of course, so I like them. So go with me on this one. So we're going to build a Western, make a Western. First thing we do is we got to go dust off the script. You know, we don't make many of them today. There's a bunch in the vault, so we'll pull one out. We're going to hire some actors, you know, old guys. You always got to have a grizzled old Western guy. Go get some horses. Got to have horses. And then we're going to go and need an iconic location, like just outside Moab in Arches National Park. And so, great. We're going to go out. We're going to start shooting. Sounds great. We're going to make a movie. And then 2 weeks in, a bear attacks and eats our lead actor. Okay, so what do? We rewrite. And then we keep shooting, and then we get into another one, and we have a drought, and we have to go get rid of all of our horses, because there's no water for them, and replace them with camels. Okay, sounds good. Rewrite again. Problem we run into is that, at the end of the day, what we really wanted was to make a classic John Wayne movie, and we ended up making something that wasn't quite as good. Now, this is how our security infrastructures at most companies have been built, is it's been in reaction to events. And much like the camel from Ishtar, which was a horse built by committee, it'll get you there, but it's mean, it spits, and it smells bad. Our security infrastructure today is an unmaintainable mess of non-integrated parts. It's not unusual for companies to have 65 tools from 35 vendors, and their security teams spend most of their time just trying to keep the darn things running. So we have to have a better approach in a better way. And it begins by designing this with intent, taking a step back and figuring out what we really needed to do. And that starts with aligning it to the business goals. And that's important, because how many of you have ever been told no by your security folks? You can't do something. Anybody? Mm-hmm. Okay. That's the old way of security thinking. The new way is we tell you how, not know, because we don't own the risk. The business owns the risk. So if our business is going to release the new superhero movie that comes out, the next Marvel movie, and wants to go show it at Comic-Con 30 days before release to a select group of people, you know, we're going to start raising risks. We're going to say, well, someone's going to be in there with their phone, and they're going to record it and release it, and it'll cost you hundreds of millions of dollars. And the business says, oh, okay, how security can you stop that? Well, we'll put metal detectors in. And then we're going to say, somebody's going to blog about it and give away the twist. Well, what can you do about that? Nothing we can do technically, but we can put contracts in place to protect it. And it's that dialogue that we have between security and the business that makes the determination. But at the end of the day, the business signs off on the risk. And for the security people in the room, get it right. Save your job. But the key is sometimes we take qualified risks from a business standpoint. And a great example of this is right now what's happening in Hawaii. Everybody see that the volcano actually blew today? Mm-hmm. Rocks, ash, big explosion. At the same time, the Hawaiian Tourism Board issued a new series of ads that says, the whole island's not on fire. Still, please come, because they're a tourism-based economy. And while there's crazy nuts like me that would love to fly out and go up to the volcano and take pictures, which is what I did, most people are staying away, and it's really having an impact. So you have to have that dialogue from both sides. Once you decide what to do, security ends up owning the implementation and executing the business policy. And the first step as we do this, once we understand this, is we have to take a step back and really review and assess where we're at, both in terms of threats to our organization. And yeah, this gets into the oogie-boogie stage. But also what the strategy should be to address those threats. Once we have the strategy in place, then we look at our existing security infrastructure and our existing security architecture and map it against our future to-be architecture and look for those gaps between the two. As much as, you know, I'm a vendor, folks. I don't pretend otherwise. I'm a security guy, but I'm also a vendor. So we'd love to come in and sell you one of everything off the truck tomorrow. But the truth is you can't possibly consume that. So you have to build a program that evolves over time. And it starts with awareness and insight. This is key to security because security is fundamentally an information management problem. It's about having good instrumentation throughout your environment. So sensors placed on your servers, those nasty little things that run with the pop-ups on our workstations all the time. Having that information collected and flow up to a central repository. And I'm not talking about a data lake here or a data swamp as they turn out to be, or just a log manager. It has to be a real analytics platform that collects and correlates and analyzes and finds the anomalies in the environment. And then that's all well and good. We know something happened. But much like credit monitoring is, hey, there goes your credit. We have to be able to actually take action on it and do something with that information in a timely manner. Because if we don't have good security information, we don't have security. Now, the information is the fuel that our security operations center runs on. And ironically, in an organization that's taken those first steps, they probably have too much information. They're drowning in all of the information that they're getting internally, plus the 80,000 new documents that are published about security events in human language that they can't possibly consume. And one way we can address that is with, wait a minute, I gotta put this down, AI. One of my colleagues tells me I have to do magic hands every time I say that. There's just a wee bit of hype about AI right now. I think our marketing people aren't just out over their skis. They're over their skis down the mountain in the lodge and they've had a couple of beers. There is way too much hype about it, but there is a reality to it as well. We can use AI to both help process and consume that information, and that really helps alleviate the skill shortage thing. Once we do find something, we have to have incident response. Some of this is in-house, some of it is you hire the team to parachute in, you know, the A team or the S team or whatever. There's a cheesy commercial about the S team on the internet. Go Google for it. By the way, another one to Google, Chris Pratt, Velociraptor Service Animal. An amazing video. I travel all the time and it's just really, I laugh about everything. But anyway, cyber incident response. This is also an area where we can bring technology to bear because if you have to dispatch desktop support to go repair every laptop out there that's got malware on it, you'll never get it done. Instead, as soon as you get an indication that there's ransomware operating in your environment, you want to be able to hit a button and go out on every PC in the environment and kill that running process. We call this orchestration, not automation. We're not building Skynet here. We're just leaving a human in the decision. Because otherwise, if you automate security response, I as an adversary can weaponize it against you, and I can all of a sudden go out and kill your major application. So there's a human who makes that decision and then orchestrates it so that the response executes seamlessly, quickly, and consistently. Now, once you've got those two things in place, you need to exercise this. And we've all heard about tabletop exercises. Usually security does it, maybe security and IT does it. What we recommend instead is that you come to a cyber range. We've got one in Cambridge. It's outside of the NSA. It's probably the most sophisticated one in the world. You go in not just with security and IT people, but with line of business people. So we bring in chief legal counsel. We bring in your PR people, your media people, your executives, HR, depending on the scenario. All of those folks. We actually have a television studio upstairs, and we put your media person under live fire with a real reporter. So they know what it's like to respond to a breach. That's how you get ready for this, is you take your playbooks and you bring them to the range and you get ready to do it. Because by the time a breach happens, it's like the airplane that had the engine explode. They went into automatic pilot and training and they ran their checklists. The key with all of this is that we have to build a sustainable security program. It has to be something that is both long haul, so that security strategy needs to last for 2 to 3 years. You review it every year, but the strategy itself shouldn't change very often. But we may have to make some small adjustments along the way. We have a merger and a new merger acquisition. There's a new threat that emerges. But if we build it right, we can have that flexibility baked into it. And one of the ways that we can really help be able to make quick adjustments is better collaboration. Now, this is internal to organizations, so it's IT and the business and security talking. It's getting the auditors to actually talk to you before the audit instead of after the audit. More importantly, though, it's about talking between organizations and between industries. I was with on a panel of 12 CISOs last week, and one of them said something that I never really thought of, but was very profound. We don't compete on security. Disney, Warner Brothers, Universal don't compete on security. You're all in it together. IBM, HP, we don't compete on security. We're all in it together. And we need to start acting that way because we are in a cold cyber war. And we have to be ready for it. And we all have to fight together. Now, with that, I want to leave you with one final thought. What I've talked about today is improving the security risk posture. And I get a lot of hand-waving and big animal pictures and that kind of thing. We're happy to come in and help. There's lots of folks in the industry, us, other people. Get somebody. If you don't know where to start, there's lots of folks out there that can help you. Because it really is about improving the security risk posture of the business as a whole. Because if you're happy with the state of your security program today, so are the bad guys. That. I've got, 2 minutes for questions.